London's Waterloo Station is one of Britain's biggest and busiest, but not today, not this week. Three alternate strike days on Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday, interspersed with 3 days of minimal service, mean travel misery for millions.
This kind of disruption is just ridiculous. Everyone knows they're well paid.
How was the journey?
Horrible. I'm coming from Harlesden. Over there, I was supposed to take a train to Swafford. It has been cancelled 4 times.
From Wimbledon, it was fine, but now going to Seven Sisters is going to take me very, very long. So the journey will be 1.5 hours, which is too much. And everybody's like messaged on the group, work group, that there's heavy traffic on the roads as well. So let's see, yeah.
Only around 20% of the normal service is running, and only on half of the network, mainly the lines running into big cities. In many rural and regional areas, there is no train service at all. The dispute between the RMT Rail Union and the employers Network Rail and the train operating companies is largely over pay and the impact of inflation on workers' wages. But the government, which directly finances Network Rail, has also ordered it to find $2.5 billion of savings. Network Rail says that's possible if staff accept new working practices. But the union says that will mean 3,000 job losses and jeopardise safety.
They want to rip up our terms and conditions that we've negotiated with the companies. They're even threatening to lower pay and extend working hours in the train operating companies. And the majority of our members have not had a pay increase for 2 to 3 years, so we've got a lot of problems.
We will continue to do all we can to find that sweet spot of compromise that is affordable for the employers, affordable for the taxpayer, affordable for the fare payer, and the RMT and our employers can live with.
At his regular meeting of Cabinet, Prime Minister Boris Johnson branded the strikes as unnecessary and wrong. He called on the British public to stay the course during what's expected to be a lengthy disruption. The UK economy is experiencing the combined effect of Brexit, the war in Ukraine and its effect on energy costs, as well as the inflationary pressure of the post-pandemic recovery. And rail workers are not the only ones complaining. The RMT is one of Britain's strongest unions, some might say most militant of unions, with their ability to paralyse the rail network during an industrial dispute. But the concerns that the RMT have raised about the difference between people's pay packets and the cost of living at the moment, the rate of inflation, are shared across many different industries and other professions. Teachers, doctors, nurses, local government workers all have pay deals in the pipeline with the government, and they're likely to be offered less than the rate of inflation. And that means a summer of discontent is looming. Paul Brennan, Al Jazeera, Waterloo Station.
Well, the cost of living crisis has triggered protests across the world in the past few days, from Belgium to Zimbabwe. The war in Ukraine has pushed up the price of food and fuel, hitting the poorest hard, also making inflation worse. A sudden rise in demand for goods as governments around the world opened up after COVID-19 lockdowns. Suppliers were unable to ship products to consumers fast enough, and that's also raised prices. Let's talk to Jeevan Sandha, who's live for us in London. He's an economist at King's College in London. Good to have you with us. So, we know what's causing the cost of living crisis. How long is it going to last? How do we solve it?
Well, it's going to be at least this year, and next year is also going to be difficult. Prices will still remain elevated, and we're looking at that really damaging incomes across the globe, being pushed into hunger and destitution. Here, of course, the UK, a wave of industrial action that certainly could be well repeated. And on top of that, political instability as well, with rising prices making people worse off. We think 250 million more may be pushed into extreme poverty this year. And of course, governments toppled in Pakistan and Sri Lanka. And the real key to solving this is actually kind of a two-pronged strategy. On the one side, we'd finance ministries in rich countries to give their citizens more money to ensure they have enough cash to get through this difficult moment. More international aid for those countries who can't afford to give their citizens money, and central banks really to get down inflation on their side by raising interest rates, as well as winding back that quantitative easing program they had that kind of accelerated throughout the pandemic.
And Jeevan, you say 250 million people will be pushed into extreme poverty. Where are those people? Which countries are being worst affected by this?
Well, of course, it's those nations that are low-income nations, particularly especially those who have been kind of liable or rather depend upon imported wheat. We know, for example, that global food prices going higher is really going to hit the poorest people in the poorest nations. In sub-Saharan Africa, for example, around 40% of people's income is spent on food compared to less than 20% in kind of the rich nations across the globe. But as generally speaking, with this cost of living crisis, it's those right at the bottom end in terms of nations, those who are the poorest nations.
What about richer nations? I mean, it's affecting people everywhere, isn't it? I mean, lots of people are having to tighten their belts and go without even basic staples quite often.
Yeah, that's certainly true. In the UK, we already face a hunger crisis here, 2.6 million kids going hungry. We think that's going to get worse. Again, specifically in the UK, it is those who are at the bottom end, the lowest incomes, who are suffering the most. And that's because they spend more of their income on food and on fuel to heat their homes. We think average inflation in the UK will hit 11% later this year, but those on the lowest income face an inflation rate of 15% a year. So really, it's up for governments to kind of put cash into families' pockets. But look, let's be clear, rich nations did get through a once-in-a-century pandemic. They locked down their economies. It's certainly within their power to ensure that no one suffers during this crisis.
Really good to talk to you, Jeevan. Many thanks indeed for being with us. Jeevan Sadda there at King's College in London.